WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. This is going to be good. This is actually going to be wise. Brought to you by our friends at Wise Market. We call these wise conversations. When this is over, my sponsorship will be gone. It'll be all over with. My career will be over with, including the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. I know why I haven't had a crab cake with this guy. He was masked up. I was masked up. He's East Side. He's moving around. But at some point, we're going to christen the Maryland Crab Cake Tour together. Mickey Coachella joins us here. You pulled the lottery balls, didn't you, at 98 Rock and BAL?
Oh, yeah. I didn't pull the balls. I called the numbers, you know. All right. I was the guy standing there going, it's 8, it's 3, it's 8.
They spin the little ball, make sure the 6 is the 9 and the 9. Right. Okay, got it. Okay.
Yeah.
So how are you? Wait, like, give me, like, first things first. I love you, miss you, how you been? Like, I haven't talked to you in a while, dude.
You know, Nestor, I'm doing great, man. I got 3 kids. My youngest is 15 now. I have an 18-year-old daughter, 17-year-old son, who in 2 weeks will be 18. My daughter will be 19 the week after that, so 3 weeks for her. And the 15-year-old will be 16 in December. So I'm almost out of the woods. None of them are in jail, pregnant, or doing drugs, so I'm doing something okay.
All right, yeah, you know, off the pole, as they say. You know, I'm just saying.
she never got on it, man. So
yeah,
I'm
well, good. You know, there's something about that really worries me about you and parenting. You know, quite frankly. So these children, I want to go have an ice cream cone with these children at one day.
Yeah, you should. And I'll tell you, man, I cannot take the credit for how well they turned out. And I don't know where to give the credit to. I think it's just them. They're just 3 really good young people that, you know, have the best intentions in life. And I'm really, really happy, excited, and glad to be their dad.
Look, man, you did a lot of radio, you know, told a lot of jokes, a lot of free form, a lot of stuff on the internet. You know, you can go Google. Why in the world would you send me a you're worse than Mueller. I'm like, what are we going to be talking about? Like I'm going to print out some
facts
and send it to you and say, we're going to talk about that time at Hammer Jacks, but we can't talk about.
Well, I just know how you sometimes will get on a little bit of a, you'll get a little bit of a bandwagon going and for yourself. And you want to talk to people about your opinions on something. I just wanted to make sure Nestor wasn't trying to take somebody down. And I'm
what would you be an expert on? You are an expert on one thing that I know about, that you know about, that you know that I know. Comedy. You mean like you're the funniest guy I know. So here's the deal.
Soccer. I could talk soccer all day from all over the world.
Okay. Well, I'll call you when I need that.
The World Cup's in November. So
I'll call you when I need that.
In November, when the World Cup starts.
Well, you know, I saw Ronaldo out there with Tom Brady. Next day, Tom Brady's back playing football. So, there's something to be said for that. I sat here and watched Lewis Black the other night. And dude, I'll be honest with you. You make me laugh in the real world. I hope you make me laugh at some. I'm laughing looking at you, quite frankly.
Yeah.
And I talk about Burks all the time because I had a crab melt last week. So your name came up you know, we walked down there and saw your Burks a million times. I needed a laugh, and Lewis Black's in my phone. So he comes on the show sometimes, and he's a little more serious in real life than like his shtick, you know?
Sure.
And he loves the Orioles, hates Daniel Snyder. So it's good fun. So he's coming in a couple of weeks. I'm going to call him, have him on. I've never Zoomed with him, so it'd be a real pleasure to look at him.
Yeah.
He's willing to do that because he's call in, right? Old school.
Definitely.
So I sat here for an hour last night, and his shtick now, what he's doing right now, he was at the National Comedy Center in Jamestown, New York. Are you familiar with this?
I've heard of it, but I really don't know much about it.
He was doing a pimp thing for them, and apparently Lucille Ball stuff down the street, and he said, you should come up. And he's got an iPad. And I noticed, I went and saw Bill Maher at the Lyric a couple years ago. He's like an iPad. You know what I mean? Like, part of me being a comedian, if I could have an iPad and not forget my, I might be funny. I mean, I want to, there's 2 things at work here. It's Lewis Black, and I want to write down the Louis Anderson too. I got to talk to you about Louis Anderson. So Louis Black, I watch him. His thing now is people, it's almost like Jim Rome, you know, it's like you or I would write a rant about what we're pissed off about. And then he reads the rant that's pre-approved. It's funny because like it's good to begin with. And then he reacts to that.
Yeah.
And it's funny. So I don't know, like, comedy's going in a different place than bits and shtick and, you know, whatever else. They're hearing you tell the same joke a different way five different times.
Yeah.
Where's comedy, dude? Because, like, I think of you as a comedian, and I know you're marketing. Yeah. We're talking about what you're doing in real life. But I think if you're playing on Friday night and charging me $20, I'm coming.
Yeah, no, I get it. And, you know, you're asking me an important question. What do I think about where comedy is right now? I'm worried about it. You know, not to get political, but there is a group of people in this country that have decided that jokes are no longer funny, that they are serious and they are intended to hurt people. And I think that's the worst thing we can do, excuse me, for our society.
He's not, you know, laugh.
Right. I mean, we are an imperfect creature. As much as we want to believe we're all special and perfect and we're all in this place where we're supposed to do the best thing, none of us do it. Not even the best of us fail. And if we can't laugh about that, if we can't laugh about the fact that an online, I forget the name of them, I think it's Bumblebee or something like that. It's kind of like The Onion. And they put a joke up, and I forget the gentleman, lady's name. I don't even know what the, did not have the transition surgery, but identifies as a woman. She is, I believe, either a general or an admiral in the military. And they named him Man of the Year. And they named the swimmer from Penn State Woman of the Year. And it was meant as irony and as sarcasm and satire. And it was taken down, and Twitter refused to let them have the article up, which was clearly satirical. They were not making fun.
There's a thin line between satirical and Polish jokes these days, right? Like, well, literally.
Yeah. I mean, and listen, there are certain things that I think this country's had we've had enough jokes, you know, race jokes. What's left to say that's not just basically coming down to you don't like a certain group of people? If that's what you're going to say, say that. Don't hide it in comedy. I'm okay with that.
But there's been plenty of comedians. And look, I don't want to even begin to, you know, the Cosby way of telling jokes,
sure,
or whatever.
Sure.
Because we all know how that turned out.
Right.
You know, we saw that miniseries. But yeah. But Working Blue, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I love me some Andrew Dice Clay. I don't know, dude, that I would laugh at it today the way I did 30 years ago.
You would if you were alone. You would.
If you were alone.
That's the big secret in the comedy world now, is that you just have to look at the entire crowd as, you know, 200 individuals. But the sad part is they become a group of one when they're an audience and they come to see you. And then you have mob mentality. And if they think one person is hurt or upset, they all have to defend that person. And my philosophy with comedy was always that I want to be a provocateur. I want you to be a little frustrated with me. I want you to wait for that moment where I give you the relief, where I say, hey, look, it's just a joke. I'm the biggest buffoon of all of us. And I think along the last 10 years of this country's life, we all became so self-important. We all got an identity that we have to live by. You know, I'm a white Christian male to anyone. I don't believe in God. But you know what? I'll take the white Christian male reference if it makes you feel better. I'm not going to argue that. But we all have an identity now instead of just being people. I still look at everybody as people. I don't care what they are. You're people. And I kind of like to believe I understand what people find funny. And it's each other. And we've lost that ability. And it makes me sad. It makes me crazy. I refuse to change. I mean, are there certain things I won't say anymore? Of course. Listen, Nestor, I've been doing this 36 years. I've been doing stand-up.
Oh, tastes change, jokes change,
everything over the years changes. When I first started, I could say any word that was in the English lexicon. Now, some people might have
George Carlin, the things you couldn't say at 98 Rock and the things I shouldn't say here.
I mean, now it's like the 390 dirty words. Like, I could be talking to someone and say, ma'am, and it turns out they've just transitioned and they're a man. I was trying to be polite and said, ma'am, and now I'm an enemy. It's insanity. I refuse to buy into it. I don't go out of my way to try to make anybody mad or hurt somebody's feelings. If you'd like me to call you
something,
I'm ready to
do it. But if you're coming into Mickey's world and we're shutting the door right. and we're having drinks and you're telling jokes.
I'm going all in. I'm going all in, and I don't give a shit who judges me. I don't care what you think, because if you know me as a person, you know my heart. I'm just trying to make you laugh. I've never intentionally hurt one person in my life intentionally. Have I hurt people? Sure I have. But my intent was never that. And that's what I'm going to die by. And I'll die on that hill. I refuse to be bullied, pressured, any of that into their way of thinking. It's still my mind. It's still my brain. And it is still my thought process. If you don't like that, don't listen to me.
That's part of sponsorship with me as well. I mean, not every executive at every company that I, represent or sell things or promote things or promote good causes is going to agree with everything I have to say. And that's about Peter Angelos or about the Ravens or about, any sort of controversial thing that's happened here over the last 31 years since I've been on the radio and the 15 or 20 years you were on the radio, right?
Yeah. And I mean, honestly, I keep bringing up the trans thing. I don't know why, just because it's so popular right now in our lexicon. And people ask me all the time how I feel about that. And I'll be honest with you.
Mickey, you're a woman?
I wish. I'm not smart enough to give a definitive answer. I can only give an opinion, and if my opinion differs from yours, well, that's okay. And I'll give you an example. You may think that the Ravens are going to win the Super Bowl next year. I may think they're going to come in dead last. Does that make us enemies?
You're a Steeler fan right now.
Right.
Or, hey, how about the Cleveland Browns? You're a big sports guy. I mean, can you imagine, dude's got 23 women saying that untoward things happened? I mean.
And listen, when I hear this stuff, I have an 18-year-old daughter, Nestor. I'm sensitive to women's, to their issues in the world. Of course I am. 20-some women come out, hey, and that's not a hoax. There's something there.
A woman wrote on my timeline instantly when everything happened the other week. Guys they drop the charges. And a woman's like, hold on. You think it's some badge of honor to come out and say that you've been assaulted? How hard that is for any woman who has been assaulted? What percentage of women are assaulted that never?
Nothing made me happier. I was the biggest Bill Cosby fan on the planet, but I got to be honest. Knowing what I know now, nothing made me happier than watching his comeuppance, watching him get punished for what he did to all those women. And I was a huge fan. Do I still think he's one of the greatest comedic minds that ever lived? Without a doubt. But I also believe he is a piece of crap as a human being. And this is coming from one of his biggest fans. I could go down the list of people.
Well, comedy has a tortured history all along, right?
Comedians are sick people, Nestor. I mean, let's be honest. There's a lot of suffering that goes into making other people laugh.
Dude, I had Joe Montana on 2 months ago, and they're doing a Lenny Bruce thing. Right. Yeah, and that's sort of the originator of what we're talking about in our modern culture, right?
Completely tortured soul, man. I mean, was so misunderstood and so far ahead of his time that it killed him. It literally killed him. Like, society killed Lenny Bruce. They made him become a heroin addict. The insanity of what was happening to him drove him insane. I mean, he was told words were domestic terror. Words, and not words like we would think now, like racial epithets and things like that, or religion. He was just making... I don't know if I can you beep things out later?
No, that's okay. Do your thing.
Well, I mean, he literally got arrested for saying the words cocksucker. He was arrested for saying And then the next
night, Navalny in Russia, this all, you know, him going to prison, the bake up is he said untoward things or like something. They had some verbiage. Have you ever seen the Russian version of the banned songs from the late 80s?
I've never seen that.
I may pull it up for you because I know I shared it many years ago because I saw it. But this is like pre-Pussy Riot. This is late 80s, Tipper Gore, Gorbachev, all of that, right?
I can tell you this. I have a friend who I met who's from the Soviet, was living in lived there when it was the Soviet Union, late 70s, early 80s. He's Russian, came to America, and he told me that when the Scorpions, which were the first.
They were one of the they're definitely on that list when I find that
I
list.
I think they were the first. And when they came to Moscow to play, he said the people there literally thought like that they were seeing something that they never thought they could ever see in their life, which was a Western band playing in Moscow. Think about how simple that is.
These are the bands, and this was the reason. And there's actually a legitimate. This is the Russian version of what the, you know, and this is when you were at Hammer Jacks and I was at Hammer Jacks, obviously Iron Maiden, AC/DC, Judas Priest, B-52s had Punk and Violence, the Talking Heads, Myth of Soviet Military Danger, the myth of that. Imagine that. UFO, Violence, Pink Floyd, Interfering in the Foreign Policy of the USSR, because they wrote a song about Afghanistan. Nazareth, Violence, Religious Mysticism, Sadism. Alice Cooper just played the other night. My friends went down there. Violence and Vandalism. So, and you can imagine how they felt about Black Sabbath.
And I'll tell you something, Nestor. When people start talking about the U.S., like we're the worst country in the world, or we're these oppressors, and I laugh at people's ignorance of what the real world is like anywhere else. We are so pampered here. We are so free. We are so lucky and fortunate to live in a country like we do. In fact, it's so great. We can shit all over it. And it's like a badge of honor. And do I think America is perfect? Absolutely not. But do I think it is the greatest example of where we should be heading as a world? 100%. You can come to this country, be anything, do anything. I'm done with the we're holding people back philosophy. Every single member that is represented in America has made something of themselves somehow. Did I think when I was a little kid there would ever be a black president? The truth is, I did. I did believe that. I did believe there would be a black president. I did believe there would be a woman. I did believe there'd be an Asian. I still believe all of that because that's what America is. And we get so hung up watching the news and all this shit that's just poured down our throats that what reality is. And if you want reality, walk outside. Go to a park and see a black guy with his kids playing catch. He looks exactly the same as me playing catch with my kids, except that he's better at it. He's more athletic because I'm not a great athlete. But my
senior moves, yes.
Yeah. My
athletic supporter is.
I've been a great athletic supporter. But my point is that we live in a world where basically everyone wants the same thing. We want to love somebody. We want to eat good food. We want to have good sex. We want to have children. For the most part, most of us, and some don't want children. And I respect that too.
I like my cat. She's laying right next to me right now.
Perfect. But the point is, Nestor, we've reached a point where nothing's even fun anymore. Everything has to have social awareness. Everything has to have some responsibility to it. And I tell people all the time, when you come to my show, check your life at the door. Because I'm going to talk about shit that means nothing. And it might be the most important issue of the day, but at the end of the day, me talking about it means nothing. I'm just giving an opinion. So leave all your shit in the car. When you get back in the car, hate the world, hate me, hate the table next to you. But when you're in the room, fucking relax and have some fun. Like, just take a load off. Living's hard. I'm there to provide a break from that.
Well, that's what comedy does, right? Like whether yes, that's why me and my wife would get together and put Louis Black on. And, yeah. You know, I ran into Louis Anderson a couple times, one time really randomly in the Las Vegas airport. And he remembered me. And I told him that, you know, I have comedy material I've put together. I've written for years and years. I've never tried it on anybody. Yeah. I've never brought it onto the air. I've always thought it's something where I'm going to corral with you at some point. And I know we're doing a thing over in East Baltimore for a while.
Yeah, we're going to do it.
That like maybe I could do 10 minutes at some point and figure it out how to do it. But Louis Anderson was really supportive. You've always been supportive. Do people often come to you and say, I want to be a comedian? Is that something that, am I a dime a dozen in comedy? Because a million people have come to me and told me they could do sports radio better than me. And then I would say, sit down.
Same thing you would say.
If you want to do comedy, get your ass on the stage and go do it, right? That would be it.
At the end of the day, Nestor, like me, you've spent most of your life since you've been 17 years old trying to communicate something, whether it was your opinion of a band, whether it was your knowledge in sports, your history of Baltimore, your passion for what your wife went through and what you two have done off of that with the donor list, which actually I don't donate to anything like that. But your wife did that marrow drive, or I can't remember exactly what it was. And I thought to myself, this guy's my friend. Like, if I can't go to this event at Buffalo Wild Wings and fill out a card, am I really his friend? Or am I just a guy that knows him? And I made it. I'm like, that guy's my friend. I'm going. And I took my kids and we met the head coach of the hockey team from Washington. And my kids thought I was.
Oh, you were in Bel Air that night when Trotz came. Oh, that's sweet. That's sweet.
And I'll tell you something, Nestor. You know, I told my kids the whole story.
Don't make me
and
cry, Mick. Come on, stop. Well, just make
but
me
you
laugh.
Remember this. You remember when I did a Remember September year, where every day in September, I wrote about somebody that impacted my life. And that month, I think it'd been a year or two after your wife's diagnosis. I put you and her in there because, you know, I know a lot of people. I know a lot of married couples. I know a lot of single people. But anytime I have ever seen you two together, and when I watch you talk about her and her, you, the love and respect and care you have for each other is to be admired. And it's just, when I see that, you were my hero that day. When you told the story of her German donor and how you met him, that's real life, Nestor. The fucking Ravens, the Orioles, comedy, that doesn't mean shit. When your wife almost dies and somebody saves her life by being not selfish, by being selfless and giving her something that saved her life. And I watched you go through the absolute heartbreak of it. The hope and praying that it did work out. And then when it did, you didn't just go, all right, cool, thanks everybody, back to the Orioles. You and your wife made it a point to pay that forward. And to me, I will be a Nestor fan till the day I die. And it's not because of what you think of Peter Angelos or what you think of Steve Bisciotti or Brooks Robinson or Johnny Unitas or Earl Weaver or Eddie Murray or anybody else I could name. It's because of the person you are. You've taken on people that should be taken on. You've never attacked the weak, the downtrodden. You've never done any of that. You've never gone after easy targets. You picked the richest guy in Maryland and spent 15 years trying to say what a scumbag that guy treated the fans like. And guess what? At the end of the day, you were right. That's the guy you took on. You didn't take on the little guy at the deli because he didn't remember your fucking lunch order and you're so important that now you got to have this big outcrying of emotion. No, something you were passionate about, just like me.
Yeah, you know, Oregon. People ask me about that. I'm like so proud of doing that. Like I still
Why
to this day,
you?
I'd say to my wife, I'm like, you know, I'm proud of almost everything I've done, Mick. Mickey Coachella is here kissing my ass. I have no idea why. I remember that morning. I this before I was married. I'm laying in bed. I had this Swedish girlfriend. The phone goes off. It was like a brick phone back in the 90s. I answer the phone. It's like 6:48. And it's like you on a radio. And I'm like, yeah. Oh, man, what is he going to say? What is he going to do to me? Because that's when the days of the wacky morning show wake up calls. Sure. Right.
Yeah. And I never understood radio.
I'm not mad at you about it or anything.
No, listen.
I just remember.
I never understood radio guys that looked for a target. I never looked for a target. They just came right into my viewfinder, you know. And but I always thought, and I've said this to everybody my whole life, whenever your name comes up, first thing out of my mouth, I love that guy. That guy's one of my heroes. Because, dude, like me, you're self-made. You branded yourself. You've marketed yourself, which, by the way, I want to take a quick second for a plug here.
Plug Victor Bravo, because I see that shirt on there, man. I see what you're doing here.
So, listen, I came to work for a great guy. This guy, I mean, he doesn't like to brag about it, but I'm working for a guy that was one of the first men or women that stormed Fallujah. This guy's a Marine. He 17 years in the military through, by the way, wartime. We're not talking about when you and I were of age and the hardest battle we had was Grenada. No, this guy was in Fallujah, in Iraq, all over the Mideast, and is a fucking hero. And he has a real estate company. We purchase as is properties, and I run his marketing department for him. And people say to me all the time, what do you know about real estate? And I go, I don't need to. He knows about real estate. I know how to market. I know how to brand. I know how to make people know about us. And it's so easy working here because everybody here knows exactly what they're doing. They're amazing at it. And I just bring my unique way of selling things into it, and it works. And I think you, by the way, you and I ever teamed up and made a marketing branding company, we'd rival Bisciotti on his wallet, trust me.
Well, at least on the east side. I'm not sure about that. For your business that you're in now, it is kind of fascinating. You know, you watch the fixer-up housing things and, you know, places they turn into great places. But real estate, crazy real estate market a year and a half ago, right? At 2.5%, unlike anything we've ever seen. I sold my place downtown. It took me a little while to do that, but I finally sold my place 2 months ago. The real estate world is always sort of vibrant.
You know, it's interesting you say that. And you know, one way I explain this to people go, oh, you're so lucky. The real estate market right now is crazy. But that's not really what we do. No matter how great the market is, personal people still have issues. They lost their job. They got divorced. Their spouse died. These are now people that were, you know, making a $1,500, $2,000 mortgage that they can't anymore. Now, can they go to foreclosure, ruin their credit, spend the next 10 years trying to rebuild it? Yeah, they can. But what we provide is a solution to whatever problem they have. So if they need to get out of their home because of divorce or because they need to sell their parents' home because the parents are transitioning into senior living, we come in and we buy their house as is. You know what we really eliminate? We eliminate fees and commissions. We buy it just like the customer does, except we say, look, you're not going to spend $15,000 or $20,000 on a real estate agent. You're not going to spend, you know, another $10,000 because of some crazy closing costs or whatever. We come in, we buy the house cash. You make whatever money you can off of it. Lucky to make some money sometimes where people thought they were going to lose everything. They end up making money because
we thought we were more upside down when we were in the end. You know what I mean? Like when we sold our place, when we started to sell it, it was, oh my God. And we finally sold it. We're like, okay. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, and that's really what we do, man. I mean, our motto is basically, you know, the name of the company is Victor Bravo Real Estate Solutions. And if you have a problem, we have a solution. No matter what your problem is with your home, we have a way to help you out. And it might not even be us buying it. We may turn you on to someone that may help you rent it yourself or remodel it. And you do want to spend all that money remodeling it instead of letting us buy it. We'll help you find somebody to do that for you at no charge. Like this company's really different. It's really a different vibe. And, you know, the man that the visionary of this company is very serious about those types of things. I mean, you don't see enough of this in the business world anymore because everybody looks at just the dollars. Does this company make money? Yes, it does. Of course it does. It's got 10 employees in this building right here, and it's a small little building. Of course the company makes money, but we're not ripping people off. We're paying a little more sometimes. We're doing the right thing. We're helping somebody move out of the house we just bought from them. We got the movers for them. We stored their stuff for a month till they can find somebody new. Mom passed away. They didn't have any way of emptying the house.
Yeah, it's not a buy. It's a facilitator. It's getting exactly. Right. Right.
We provide solutions based on your problem.
Well, and that's part of knowing business too, that it's nice to be cash and carry, but if you really want the property and you get to make some money on it and they get an easier exit, certainly when I sold my place, the guy that bought it was a good dude. And it kind of made in a world full of awfulness and back and forth, it's nice when people can make things easy. Mickey Coachella is our guest here on Baltimore Positive. I got to give you a little story here because this came to me, and you asked me, like, Mohler, what are we going to talk about? I had the actor John Scheck on. Do you know John Scheck? You know
I know Jonathan Scheck, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I had him on earlier, and
he's a Dundalk boy.
No, Abingdon, Edgewood, not Edgemere.
I'm sorry. You're right.
Edgewood, not Edgemere.
Yes.
So, yes. Or not Edgewater, which makes them Annapolis people.
Right.
So he came on with me. He was telling some old stories. He's such an Oriole fan. He's a really, really nice guy. And I don't really know him like in the real world at all, other than that thing you do. And he's telling me some Tom Hanks stories or whatever. And I said, dude, how does a kid from Edgewood wind up? You go listen to it out of Baltimore. He wind up in Hollywood. And he said, well, I was at UMBC and I went to a place called Hammer Jacks. And he said that he was in a dance competition and won $500 and then came back and then won the grant. And I'm like, I'm thinking to myself, because I follow Bud Becker on Facebook like everyone. Sure. And, I see the old night. I have those. I have an Ace Frehley signed monthly calendar with, you know, comedian Mickey Coachella and Helix was playing on a Saturday and Tommy Cromwell and the Smithereens and like all of that. Right.
By the way, that's 1991. I know the year well.
Naughty Negligee. Speaking of pole dancing, I mean, not for your kids, of course, but it was available. And I did bring that up in the program. So I said to him, I'm like, I remember chicks dancing and I remember.
No, we had a guy contest too. Thursday nights.
Did you host this night that John Scheck? Yeah. Okay. So give me, it'll be a good little bookend story because he said the words Hammerjacks to me and I didn't even, put together and I'm like, so what do you want to talk about? We'll talk about Hammerjacks.
Well, so back then it was fun. I mean, it was the explosion of strip bars in the late 80s, early 90s. It was, it was the pinnacle of sex sells. I mean, Dr. Feelgood.
You speak of it as though I have knowledge of this, perhaps.
Right. Whatever. We know the church boy you are. But the point is, and then the girls started demanding, they wanted to see, guys. So all these alpha males in Hammerjacks are sitting around and Louie, the owner, looks at me and goes, what do you think we should do? I said, let's just do a guy night.
Let's just throw Tom Scott out there and have him dance around.
Right. So what we did was we just advertised, it's the night of the guys. I forget what we called it.
And the dude wanted to win $500, right? So
we got the same money as the girls got on Tuesday night. And we didn't know what to expect. And the first Thursday, I bet we had 900 girls, maybe 300 guys. And the guys all backstage that were in the contest were basically male strippers. These were guys that were doing these
professions. Male
bachelor party.
They were in the Thunder from Down Under and had an Australian.
And I remember.
What was it? Chippendales. That's what. Yeah. Chippendales. That's it.
That's what it was.
You remember even in Bachelor Party, there was a scene with the hot dog.
Yes.
Ah, yes.
So these
it was
guys,
a period piece, Mickey, a period
these
piece.
Guys, yeah. These guys came out. I remember John doing it and winning. I remember it like it was yesterday. We don't really know each other. I mean, he may remember me from that, but I never had any other interaction with him other than him in a thong.
He was never on your show on 98 Rock or anything, really? No,
I never had him on. I mean, Kirk may have, or Kirk and Mark, or any of those guys may have. I never did, and I would have loved to, especially when he was married to Christina Applegate, because right. I'm a huge fan. And they lived right in Bel Air in Todd Lakes at the time. And I was just moving to Harford County, so maybe I drove by their street a couple times, hoping that maybe she's going to the grocery store. Maybe. I'm not saying it's definite.
Are there people that ran into Christina Applegate in Bel Air? Really? I didn't.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, she was spotted many times.
Okay, fair enough. Mickey Coachella is here. Okay, so you asked what we're going to talk about, and I'm gonna get real life with you. You know, John Allen and I are close, right? Like, we grew up together.
He's one of my best friends too. Yeah,
we've become closer as life goes on. Sure. And we don't get together often enough. Like, you and I haven't been together in a while.
I know.
You have to help me with my comedy. So we were together, and I have this Led Zeppelin belt buckle that I'm gonna take it out here and show it to you. And you can tell me honestly if you remember this or not. Do you remember these belt buckles?
Dude, I won. I'm not making this up. I won that exact same belt buckle at the Fullerton Carnival in 1982.
The carnival ones were different. They were cheaper. This wasn't these were more expensive. The carnival ones are like the silver with fake. Yeah, this was like legitimate. Like,
okay,
KB East Point Mall. This is the Zeppelin belt buckle.
It's beautiful.
Okay?
Yeah.
All right. So I had this on. We're having a glass of wine in Howard County. I was going to a friend's house for a party. And we're just getting together, having a burger and bullshitting like we do as friends. And
sure.
I don't know. Like, it's like you asked me what we're going to talk about. I said, hey, man, do you remember these? He's like, dude, I have a couple of those.
Yeah.
So I got to go home and find them. So he went home the next day and he sent me two pictures. One was an Aerosmith belt buckle that was killer. Like, Aerosmith rocks the script. And it wasn't metallic like this one. It was more flat. And then he sent me a Stevie Wonder, Songs in the Key of Life, this orange blossom looking thing. That's a beautiful buckle, right?
Yeah.
And I said to him, I said, you know what, dude, my wife about 4 years ago knew that I loved this belt buckle and didn't have a belt for it. And she bought me a Rush 2112 belt buckle, and it came, and I'm like, I wonder if this is original or if like Rush did these, because it was beautiful. And it was,
sure.
I don't have it here, 'cause we just recently moved and it's in a box and I'll find it.
Sure.
But nonetheless, I went online and I've gotten like crazy about this. Right. So the last couple of weeks, I have never been on eBay in my life. Okay.
Right.
So like literally in my life, I've never been on eBay. So I've gone on eBay, and these things cost anywhere from, you know, 30 to 100 bucks. The Kiss stuff is outrageous. The Kiss ones are $400 and $500 because everybody wants them. They're all in mint condition. I just want to wear these belt buckles. So Johnny's going to be pissed. He doesn't know yet, but like, look, how killer is that? How killer is that, right?
I love it.
So I've been having fun with this all along, and because you know we got to roll with the changes. You got to roll with the changes, okay? So I've been having fun here, and one of my favorite songs, "Don't Bring Me Down." You got me running, going out of my mind. How about this?
What a great song.
How about this, huh?
Oh my God! Don't let Russ Motla see that.
Oh, Motla would want it. Is he love Boston?
Oh my God, Motla would love that.
I have a second one. I may be helping you out with it. So I went to see this band last week. One of my first concert I ever saw. You ready for this?
Oh my God.
How killer is this Styx buckle, right? So I'm showing you this. So I've been picking these things up, and my friend Adam Smolin will be upset about this one here, huh?
Oh my God, look at you. Dude.
So I've been having fun. I've been getting these pretty cheap, actually, because some of them are a little beaten up and I have a good time. And then I saw this one here. This was my favorite one. This is the one I'm going to wear probably more than any other one. It was the first one I acquired. How killer is that car's buckle? Look at that, right? So all this shit you collect, autographs, Paul McCartney autograph, like Dinner with David Bowie and signed stuff. You can't do anything with that. So what I'm going to do is the next time I see you and we do some comedy together, I'm going to wear my favorite belt buckle for you.
Yes.
You probably don't. They did make a KC and the Sunshine Band one. I haven't been able to get that one yet. But my dude, blaming it all on the Knights on Broadway. Yeah? Huh?
I would wear that belt buckle 7 days a week.
Well, what would you do with the other ones, you know?
Amazing.
So, Master, I'm just having fun, dude. You know, rock and roll life.
I might have to join you on this belt buckle collecting hobby and see who can find the rarest, best one.
The best, the most expensive one that I can't get or find, there's a blue Van Halen, like a pearl blue Van Halen.
Well, I know you're a huge Van Halen fan.
Yeah, and I'm gonna get one of the Van Halen, but probably not that one. Right. But I've managed it. The cheap trick one is one I really, really want. And I can't, it's really hard to get. So yeah. But the cheap trick one is the script, cheap trick.
Yeah.
Badass. Yeah. So I'm having fun. I'm having fun collecting some belt buckles. So there. Yeah, I think that's that. Awesome.
You know, one thing I can't believe I never got you to do is golf.
Nah.
Why?
Listen, I did it. I did a really good bit with Tom Maher the first day, the T-Bone Tom, not Mr. Maher who passed. T-Bone used to sit with me. Everybody's trying to get me to golf back in the 90s. So there's the whole story. Norm Vakoski at Furnace Creek Golf gave me lessons. This was right after like Greg Norman, early 90s, Jack Nicklaus made a run, 94, 95, 96, in that range. I went and took a lesson. And, you know, I played a lot of baseball, a ton of baseball.
Sure. Yeah.
And I played a ton. I'm a really good tennis player when my knees hold up. I mean, I played a lot of tennis, right? So the fact that the ball moves and you're hitting it to me, I always thought golf was a little bit of a sissy sport. And no offense, just because the ball doesn't move. And you play putt-putt at the, you know, like at some point the ball doesn't move. So you have nobody to blame. And I would say, and that's why people love golf that love it. But I would say if I liked it enough, I could become adequate at it.
Look, I know you're an athletic guy. I mean, I know you grew up playing sports.
This was the challenge. My dad didn't play golf. I saw it as a snooty thing. I have Classic Five as a sponsor. You can go get on, play, but just in general, it is a snooty thing. And the Masters and like is coming up, and it generally is an expensive thing for people of affluence and generally white people in this country. So that's what it is. But that's not why I didn't like it. That's not why. But that's not why I didn't like it or didn't play it or didn't aspire. I went and he taught me how to hold the club the right way.
Right.
The pinky. And like, because I was holding like Fred Flintstone, right? You know,
like a baseball bat. Yeah.
Correct. So I learned how to do it. And I took my son out and we hit balls. And then I went out on a course one day and I kind of had a foursome of jerks the first day, famously.
Yeah.
And I did a whole bit on it, really pissed the guy off that I golf with, but I didn't care because he was kind of a jerk anyway. So I don't want to say I never went back, but I've like playing 18 holes of that. My wife gets on me that I never see movies. I'm running my business now and buying belt buckles as well. I found my Rush belt buckle. That's kind of killer, isn't it? Look at that.
Oh my God.
You'd wear that, wouldn't you?
You better not keep these in your home.
Yeah, I know.
I might break in.
Ron Fajowski, my keyboard player, is already threatened to steal this. And I'm like, you can borrow it whenever you want, man.
Dude, so, I promise you I'm going to call you. When I shoot my next comedy special, I'm wearing one of those belt buckles. You're going to lend it to me. I don't know which one. Do you have an AC/DC one?
No, but no, there was no AC/DC one. They came late. These were made in 77, 78, and 79. Wow. And if you do a little, research on them and your marketing side. By the way, Mickey Kachelis, you're telling me what you're doing, Mickey. Update.
I work for a company called Victor Bravo. You can find out everything you want about us at victorbravo.com. We buy homes in as is condition. We give you a really fair, very fast, usually same day offer that we come see the property. We'll make an offer on your home. And you literally, if you want, can walk out of it, leave everything there. It's that simple.
So this is another one of the ones I have, and it's really cool. It's like brand. It's really a nice one. It's a Yes belt buckle.
Oh, I see Yes now. Yeah.
Yeah. This is a Yes belt buckle. So, you know, I would say to you, what the hell? What did you ask me? You asked me something about, what the hell did you ask me?
AC/DC.
A coin. If you look on the back, if you see it, do you remember Kiss albums? Did you collect Kiss albums when you were a kid?
Of course. I had every Kiss album up to about Probably 92, 93.
Okay, so I was introduced to KISS. I wrote about this a couple years ago. Dave Geller asked me to write about my favorite albums. The first album I ever got was KISS Alive.
Me too.
Okay.
Me too.
My cousin Nelson Escandela, my Venezuelan cousin who lives in Maracaibo to this day and loves AC/DC and loves heavy metal, Rock, Iron Maiden and all that stuff. Right. He gave me that KISS album back in the day. And on every KISS album is Casablanca. Remember that? And Desmond Child wrote all those songs who I've had on the show and wrote all the Bon Jovi songs and all that. Wrote I Was Made for Loving You.
Yeah.
And there was a coin, A-U-C-O-I-N. Bill O'Coin.
I met Bill O'Coin.
Do tell.
And it was an interesting meeting in Los Angeles. I was a very young, skinnier, handsome man. And he found me very interesting to talk to. I'll just leave it at that.
Fair enough. So anyway, he apparently, he owned all the KISS stuff, right? So all the KISS army, he created the KISS army. Like
he was there. Let me put it in perspective for people. Bill O'Coin was to KISS what Colonel Tom Parker was to Elvis, period.
And saw himself that way.
Absolutely. And modeled himself that way.
So here's what I'm going to tell you. And I have a couple of these and I'll give you a little story and I've pieced this together and I haven't done enough research on it. So I may be talking a little bit out of my rectum, but I don't think I am. This is a 1976 belt buckle. You can see it's not metallic, right? It's not disco.
Right.
This is Davy Jones locker, merry-go-round, rock and roll, right? Like literally record theater, 1976, smoking dope, listening to Lynyrd Skynyrd and Steve Miller. Okay. So I'll show you a couple more of the older belts. This is a 76 belt that Steve Miller, you can see it's not metallic, right? It's more like Zeppelin Houses of the Holy 75, 76. So here's what happened. KISS happens in 76, 77, 78. Rock and Roll Over, Love Gun, Alive 2, right? All of that
happens. Drastic Pill,
And then one sort of major thing happened. Disco happened. Disco happened. Saturday, you can get Saturday Night Fever. You can get a Tony Manero belt. You could So apparently at some point when that happened, someone must have come to him to do a KISS belt. And he... like this is a 76 ELO belt. It's not metallic. It's sort of glazed gold.
It's almost like shower tile.
Correct. It is it's exactly like that. Right. Yeah. And here is a 1976 album that probably the greatest album ever made. Not, you know, I can make arguments about it. That's also of that era. You can see it's a little scratched on it, but I can hold it. In the light. None of these are metallic. So they weren't called a coin then. But then in 77, 78, at some point they were called a coin and they started to look like Led Zeppelin went to this from a flatter look.
Yes.
A coin was a marketing guy, fell into the disco thing and owned this company. They're called a coin Pacifica pieces, right?
Yes.
So he had a vision for disco and rock that you hear and I Would Made for Loving You instantly, right?
Dude, he was a genius. He had a lot of demons. I don't know how much you know about his story.
No, I don't at all.
Fascinating story.
Part of history.
If you want a great thing to read, Paul Stanley's book, I listened to the audio book. It was fascinating.
And
He
reads it.
Dude, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, and his voice, it'd be great.
No question. Yeah. It's so funny when he talks about it too, man. You know, like I told you, my favorite thing Paul Stanley ever said was told to me by comedian Craig Gass, and he witnessed it, that they're doing a press conference one time. And Paul Stanley's like a great front man, but sometimes he says things that are so cheesy, you cringe. And at this press conference, he said, you know, a lot of bands come in and they're just there for like the dessert and the drink. We're the type of band that likes to sit around for the rolls.
I've interviewed Paul a few times, right?
Oh, I love him.
And this goes back to Bill O'Coin because Bill O'Coin made money. He made some coin on this. So I was such a KISS.
Yeah,
KISS
we
and
all
the Fonz.
Were.
KISS and the Fonz, man. In 1977, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So somehow in a Circus magazine or something at the mall, I brought it home and I had to have a Kiss Army jacket. I had to join a Kiss Army, right?
Sure.
And all my friends, Kevin Egg. Right. There you go. So I sent the 1995 offer, the jacket. And the jacket was supposed to be some miracle thing that Ace Frehley came up with when he visited, you know, Planet
Love Gun. Or wherever the hell he was.
Right, exactly. And it came, and it was like, I'm not going to lie to you, it was a piece of shit. It was like a piece of paper. It was like plastic, but it's probably worth $1,500 right now.
Thousands.
No
thousands.
Doubt, right? Yeah. So my dad, I remember my dad. I just said, you have these memories of your parents. You know, I'm cleaning out the shed, and we're probably getting like the catcher's mitts because my dad was a baseball manager, probably getting all he always had the equipment, the helmets and the bats in the bag. My Kiss jacket was there. And I remember my dad saying, and you know, his salty Bethlehem Steel, Scranton, Pennsylvania way.
Yeah.
Kiss doesn't care about you. Kiss doesn't give a shit about you. So this goes to 1978, right? So it's the funniest thing. In 1984, I had a chance to interview Paul Stanley. And Paul Stanley called. I had the interview on tape. I remember what he said to me. And I'll try to do a Paul. You do a better Paul than I do. And so I'm 15 years old. I'm on the phone with Paul Stanley. I'm not wearing my Kiss jacket. I'm trying to be professional. Mr. Stanley, I'm reporting for the Baltimore News American. I loved you on the Love Gun tour. So I'm interviewing him. And I asked, it was when Vinnie Vincent left the band and Mark St. John came in and they eventually settled on Bruce Kulick, right?
Yeah.
And they were going through changes. Peter Criss was drying out and Eric Carr was in the band, I think, at that time.
Yeah, he was.
He was in the band at that time. So this was the Animal Eyes show at the the Royal Farms Arena, then the Baltimore Civic Center. So he said to me, you know, Vinnie tried to get in the plane and tell the pilot how to fly the 747, you know, it was like one of those kinds of, so he was very kind to me. I have pictures of him and Paul backstage and like all that. 5-6 years later, I'm at the Evening Sun. I'm syndicated. I'm interviewing all the big stars because my work, I had to explain this to some people, but the reason I had access to Robert Plant and Jimmy Page and David Bowie and like all these people would sit with me, Billy Joel, John Bon Jovi, because Times Mirror bought the Sun. When my story was written, it would go on the Times Mirror wire. And I was in a restaurant in the middle of Ohio one day. I picked up the paper and my story in the Moody Blues was in there that day.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. So but this was pre the internet, right? Sure. So Paul Stanley decides to do an interview during they had the makeup off. It was, God, the tears are falling, whatever. Heaven's on fire.
Lick it up.
It was after Lick It Up though. It was the next one after that. Some, I'm trying to remember the album cover. Yeah. They played the Patriot Center. Okay.
Right.
So they're playing the Patriot Center and I was supposed to do an interview with Paul and Paul's like, come down to the arena. We'll do it before the show. Come down early. I got there. He got hung up. We get hung up. Manager tells me to call. I'm outside the Patriot Center on a CNP phone, calling the hotel, ringing his room. He answers. I'm standing at the box office. People are in line. He's like, Nestor, dude, we're going to have to do this after the show. Come back to my hotel. We'll hang out as long as you want, whatever you need. I went back to the Hyatt at the dullest thing, went up the elevator. Girls are banging on the door. Bodyguards are throwing them out. Paul Stanley's in one of those robes. We sat down. We had turkey and broccoli and Pepsi, and we talked for 2.5 hours. And I'm thinking to myself, my dad told me you didn't give a shit about me. Remember that? You know, like you're a way better guy than my dad thought you were going to be when we gave Bill a coin money for the cheesy jacket you gave. So there's my Kiss story for you.
Well, I love that Kiss story, and I'll give you one. I was with Russ Motla.
Is this the night you were at Night Shift and Gene Simmons showed up?
No, different. but I will tell you this story. I went to see them at the Capitol Center with Russ Motla, and we go backstage. And at the time, a guy named Larry Mazur was their manager. He managed Cinderella. He managed a lot of these big 80s hair bands, and he took Kiss on. So him and Russ were tight. And we go back, and Larry introduces me to him. And he says to me, Larry says, are you a big Kiss fan? I said, oh, my God, you know. My whole childhood was Kiss. And he said, do you want to meet those guys? And I was like, are you kidding me? Yes. And
Because you wanted the best. You got the best, the hottest band in the world.
The next thing I know, within a minute, Gene's walking down. This is after the show. Gene's walking out of his dressing room. He's a big guy. And Larry's standing there. And I'm there. And Russ Motla's there. And Gene walks up to Larry and says, how was the show? And Larry points to me and goes, why don't you ask him? He's a big fan. And I'm like, oh, my God. You know, I'm going to critique Gene Simmons' show about getting. So he looks at me.
This was the makeup in 96. This is when they first put the makeup back on. I went to that. I remember that show. I went to that show with Steve Everett. No,
I'm wrong. It was the last tour before that. It was like 92, 93.
Okay, because they put the makeup back on in 96. And I went up to the Garden and saw him. It was on.
So my story is going to be interesting to you because of that. So Gene looks me dead in the face and he's looking down because I'm 5'3". He's about 6'5". And he looks down at me and then I wish I could do Gene, but I can't. And in that Gene voice, he says, well, what did you think? And I said, listen, Gene, I've seen you guys 5 times. It's the first time I ever saw you without the makeup. And he said, well, when did you see me? I said, I saw you in 77, 79, and I think 80, I forget, or whatever, however many times it was. And he goes, did you miss the makeup? And I said, I have to be honest with you. I did. And he looks Larry Mazur in the face and he says, I told you. And then he walked away. And Larry looks at me and goes, for 2 years now, Gene is trying to talk the band into putting the makeup back on. And they're all against it. And I always tell people, I'm the reason they put the makeup back on.
You know what? I have the tape of Paul and I've never aired it because it was on a tape recorder on the table, and it needs professional editing. I need to give it to Brill Hart or somebody and have it brush it up. Me.
I could do it for you. I can do that.
100%. I'd be glad to give it to you. Yeah, I'd be glad to give it to you.
And here's what we got.
I'm sure it was addressed in that conversation. I said something about taking the makeup off, and they had a stock answer then, right?
Sure,
answer was, well, you know, that was then, this is now, or this is the new Kiss, or like the new Coke or whatever, right?
Right. No, listen, man, I would love to fix that audio, break it into segments. You and I do your show, and like we listen and critique it as we're going.
Dude, stop.
We gotta do it.
All right.
Listen, bud. Listen, I gotta jump too. Listen, there's nothing I enjoy more than talking to you, Nestor. And I know you always say I'm kissing your ass, but you know, you and I are very opinionated guys. We've cut our teeth with our opinions. And I think it's important that people know that what I say about you is the absolute truth. I have nothing but respect and admiration for you. I'm a huge fan. And anything I can ever do to help you, you know you can count on me, bro.
You know what the craziest thing is? In one of these belt buckles I bought, it says buying Kiss items. Come on. He is Mickey Coachella. He always makes me laugh, even when I'm not looking at my Led Zeppelin belt buckles. I'm Nestor. Right. We're doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. We're getting out on the road, all presented by our friends at the Maryland Lottery, as well as our friends at Goodwill Industries of the Chesapeake. Did a great conversation with Lisa Rosiniak earlier this week as well. Headed to the NFL owners meetings and getting ready for opening day. I'll have Mick back on to give his soccer predictions. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking. Baltimore, positive.